We're down to the final four in the Singapore Cup, and surprise, surprise, the Sunken Sailors are out. So where do they go from here?
Meanwhile, the best of the best in 2022 have been honoured at the awards night, with champions Albrecht winning big.
Plenty to look forward to, so sit tight, it's time for the SPL Podcast.
Hi everyone, it's Raushan.
And this is Farah. Now, the SPL delivered in more ways than one, and the Singapore Cup hasn't disappointed either, has it, Raushan?
Yeah, it certainly hasn't at all. I thought eventually Albrecht won the title with weeks to spare, so that gave us a bit of breathing space. But the SG Cup the Singapore Cup has been immense, and I've enjoyed the football thus far. And speaking of things I'm excited about, I'm particularly excited about having our guest today. Kide Kamis joins us on the show. At some point, I wondered whether we'll have Kide on again or Luca will still be in a job. Turns out both are happening at the same time. Kide, good to have you with us.
Yeah, nice to be back and nice to speak about Singapore Cup at this point of time.
I'm sure you're going to speak about more than just the Singapore Cup, but let's start with the SPL Awards. Farah, why don't you take me through that segment?
Indeed. I mean, there's only one place we can begin with, and I feel it should be with the SPL Awards. And so on the FAS Awards nights, we saw the best of the best recognized for their contributions in the league this season. Coach of the Year, Kazuaki Yoshinaga. Do we all agree that King Kazu was the standout choice amongst the three finalists here? Kide, I'll come to you first.
Yeah, I think amongst the three finalists, I would say, you know, they are in the semis of Singapore Cup. They won the championship for the league. So I don't think there's any debate as in who's supposed to be winning the Coach of the Year. But then again, I personally want to give a bit of props to Gavin Lee, who is not amongst the three. And I felt that he's more deserving than any one of the two that was on the list. He has a small squad, a very young team as well. And they are in the semis and they finished third, which is not too bad for their budget and also for their objectives that they have had this season. But again, coming back to King Kazu, I don't think there's any doubt and I don't think there's any debate that can be talked about him winning the Coach of the Year.
Yeah, I think I 100% agree with Kide. Amongst the nominees, King Kazu is the standout choice, right? I think Noah Lee has a good shout, a bigger shout compared to Hazrin Jelani, purely because of the way the season panned out for Tanjung Pagar. But yeah, I think Kide speaks the truth when he says Gavin Lee should have been in amongst the nominees as well. Tampines Rovers fans were up in arms about this. I'm sure Tampines Rovers fans listening to this podcast now will be still wondering why Gavin Lee wasn't in the running. The only reason I can think of why Gavin wasn't in the running is because maybe there was one too many off-field antics with Tampines Rovers this season, and possibly that weighed on their minds when they made up the shortlist. But all things considered, King Kazu is back and back in a big way, and I will tell you at the end of the podcast, but I expect Albrecht to complete the double and complete their clean sweep.
Yeah, indeed. I feel like the both of you said it. Pretty much all around, we should all be pleased with the fact that it was King Kazu who took home the Coach of the Year award. Another person who I feel like most are pleased with winning the Young Player of the Year award was Ilhan Fandi. Was that the obvious choice, Kide?
Yeah, I think usually Young Player of the Year goes to locals more than foreigners. And I would think that the goals that he has scored, the contributions that he has made over the season with Albrecht, and also a small bit with Young Lions, warranted him that award. Big number of goals, the most since Faris Ramli in 2019. So I think that naturally would go to him than anybody else. Yeah. So I wouldn't disagree with any of those nominations, and also at the end of it, the winner of the Young Player of the Year award.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think it's nice to see a Singaporean get it, and it's a good pat on the shoulder for a stellar season that Ilhan has had. I mean, the impact he's had on that Albrecht team to steer them towards the title. Lest we forget, I've mentioned this at various points throughout this season, that Albrecht did have a bit of a wobble midway through when they drew four games in a row. Yoshinaga was linked to the Singapore job, and I thought Ilhan was the catalyst to make them align their efforts, and obviously LCS then went on to hand the title to Albrecht. But I thought Ilhan had a massive impact. And yeah, it's deserving, fully deserving. And I'm completely in agreement with Kide that they should continue to give it to the best Singaporean in the league just so it pays tribute to the younger players coming through the system.
Like we said earlier, Albrecht won big on the night because the Player of the Year award went to Kodai Tanaka. The question here is, does Maxim Lestienne deserve it more, Kide?
On the context of LCS not winning anything this season, I don't think he should be the Player of the Year. But of course, by pure talent itself, he's so much better player than Kodai Tanaka, who is the eventual winner. But then again, at the end of the day, you got to look at individual contributions towards the team's results, the team's objectives. So LCS second, and also not in the Singapore Cup anymore. So you can't really say that, you know, he has done a fantastic job in propelling LCS forward to become champions, because obviously they didn't. Which is why I think Kodai Tanaka would be expected to win it more than him over this season as well. A big number of goals for Kodai Tanaka, a lot of contributions on the field as well in terms of assists. So I would say his goals also brought the championship for Albrecht Niigata, and I would think that it's deserving for him to be winning the Player of the Year rather than Maxim Lestienne.
I disagree. I think I can understand Kide's footballing perspective. He's obviously a former player and a former coach, so he's looking at it from a footballer's perspective. I'm purely looking at it from a fan perspective, and Maxim was the player to get fans off their seat, right? People who pay money to buy a ticket to go and watch. Whether that's the only criteria for Player of the Year, probably not. But I think Maxim Lestienne can feel hard done by not to have won the award, purely because he has 23 assists, 12 goals. That equates to, what, 35 goal contributions. That is 10 short of Kodai Tanaka, who had 30... I beg your pardon, that's 8 short of Kodai Tanaka, who had 33 goals and 10 assists. So, I can see the numbers pointing in Tanaka's favour, but in terms of Player of the Year, standout player, I still think Lestienne deserves the award. But to Kide's point, if you win the silverware, then you are warranted. And it's across the various different awards they were given out on the night, the awards night, across the lower leagues as well. It's the team that won the league that more or less swapped the awards up. So I'm not surprised that eventually Tanaka got the award.
I think what most people were, that I saw most people come out with and say that is, I mean, do you agree that if you win the title, you are shoo-in for these awards? I mean, because you don't have to win the title to be able or to be the best player in the league for the season, right?
Yeah, these individual awards are individuals, for individuals. But then again, somehow, you will always be tied to the team who does well, who win championships. I think it's the same for, you know, the Ballon d'Ors all over the world. Also, they will surely be tied to teams winning something. But then again, I agree to Raushan to a certain point, but it also must be in line with the team objectives. This is why I feel. You have to contribute to your team and at the same time be prominent in terms of performance, in terms of statistics, to be in for a shout to win this kind of individual awards.
Sorry, just to chime in here. Kide, agree with you. Win the title, you probably win Player of the Year, to answer Farah's question. But in 2021, I don't recall Haugang winning the title. Community Doi was Player of the Year. In 2020, I believe Albrecht won the title. Gabriel Quek was Player of the Year. In 2019, Haugang didn't win the title. Faris Ramli won the Player of the Year. This is not criticism towards what you're trying to say. This is then making me wonder why. I mean, the consistency in terms of decision, like, you know what I mean? There's no reference. The past three winners obviously haven't been title winners. I cannot tell you offhand whether they were the best players in the league, but I'm pretty sure it was close competition as well. So this year, why suddenly pander to the idea of the champions needing to win the award? That's my only question mark about it. But if I could give out two golden boots, it would be one to Tanaka, one to Maxim Lestienne, purely because they are both excellent players who have been a joy to watch all season long.
I mean, with that being said, right, like you say, Roshan, Maxim can feel like hard done by not winning the Player of the Year award. But that's in no way saying that Kodai Tanaka is absolutely undeserving of the award. He definitely deserves it. Just maybe perhaps we might all disagree as to who might deserve it more. But whatever it is, at the end of the day, congratulations to every single one of you who've won.
Just final point. Sorry, I don't think... I think we need to caveat that the Player of the Year is not a popularity contest. So while Maxim may be the more popular choice, I mean, if this was Singapore Idol and you opened it up to votes, Maxim Lestian will win. But from a footballing perspective, as Kide has touched on, it's probably why Tanaka got it in his contributions to Albrecht. So again, two boots, just give it to the both of them. We'll be happy here.
Go for it. Congratulations again to everyone.
We will give out the TFW season awards at some point. So perhaps Maxim can look out for that.
Indeed. Now, okay, let's move on to the action proper, shall we? Because we are finally down to the final four in the Singapore Cup. And I guess... well, I don't even know if I can say that I'm surprised at this point, but the Sailors amazingly have not made it through to the semi-finals. And just to remind everyone at home, Deepan and Roshan said that Lion City Sailors will win the Singapore Cup. But I said
Deepan
that
Deepan said a lot of things. Deepan said a lot of things. He probably should just, you know, stop covering Singapore football.
Well, that's another whole topic altogether. But like I said, I also said Geylang would win. So if you need any predictions for future or anything about your life, just don't ask us, because clearly we cannot be trusted with any sort of...
for your life, not even about football, for your life.
Yeah, just anything. Just don't ask us. But anyways, let's not mince our words here, because the Lion City Sailors have definitely bottled it, haven't they? Because despite the torrid end to the season that they had, surely none of us saw this coming, did we, Hide?
I think I saw this coming.
Okay, go.
I think
you can ask life advice from Kide. Don't ask all of us. Go on, Kide. Sorry to interrupt.
The decline of LCS in terms of performance and also results, again, can clearly be seen towards the last part of the season for the league. And with that, moving forward, nothing has changed. The way they played... again, I still feel that there were too much changes that Luka wanted to implement for the team. And I think it runs deeper than that within the team itself. It's not just tactical. It's a lot about relationships within the team itself. Not between players and players, but between the coaches, or rather the coach and the players. And because of that, there's nothing much that can be done, because the ill feelings or the negative environment that was created just couldn't overturn the whole, you know, wanting to win for the Singapore Cup towards the group stage. And if you look at how they have performed, you know, if it looks like before the start of the cup itself, it's going to be quite simple, in the sense that you have two top teams in the league against the two bottom teams in the league, right? And there's no way that, if you look at it, there's no way that LCS would be out in the cup against Balestier and Young Lions, a team that everybody was beating very easily. But then again, performance doesn't warrant any wins at all. And the results in the end, with a draw, with a loss against Urbirex, which was expected. I think that towards after the second game, when you play against Urbirex, they want to win because they want to secure a top spot. And then LCS with problems still there within the team, there's no way that they could have won that match. Yeah. So I think that it's fair to say that Lion City Sailors have bottled it. Lion City Sailors have failed in terms of their season conquest. They really didn't do anything enough to even warrant a win in the last three games. So they are where they are supposed to be, and they should now reflect at the things that they have decided, and on field matters especially, and, you know, build on it, whether they need a new coach or whether they need new players, new sets of players. It really depends on what they are looking at to the future.
I do want to bring to Hider's earlier point about the relationship between the coaches and the players. Because, Roshan, there definitely have been rumours, right, of Luka perhaps losing the dressing room. And I feel like if you do watch the games, if you were there watching them, it's pretty obvious sometimes. You see when Luka is trying to speak to the players, you look at the players on the bench, they just don't look interested when he's speaking. It's not a good look overall. But is it a worse reflection on Luka or the players?
That's a loaded question. I feel like it's mostly on the players. I have to say this. For Luka's lack of pedigree, you have to question management putting him in that job in the first place. Look, if I was offered the LCS position, I have zero credentials to be a coach, by the way. I would take it.
Yeah,
I would exactly. Answer, would you not take it? I think all three of us in this podcast would take it. Anybody, any of the listeners would take it. So, you can't really blame Luka for taking up the challenge. But for the players not to respect him, and we're talking about season pros, we're talking about a whole bunch of national players there, we're talking about players not just with Singaporean pedigree, we're talking about the likes of Kim Shin-wook, the likes of Maxim Lesti and Diego Lopez. There are players with massive pedigree there. So, for them not to heed the coach's advice or respect the coach enough, which is what it seems from the outside, it's a bad reflection on the players, in my opinion. I can understand being disinterested. I can understand, I mean, in any working situation, new boss comes in, overnight you want to change everything, you will feel frustrated, but you still have to toe the line. And I think LCS are way past the line at the moment. Like, it was, the word bottle job is too kind for LCS at the moment, the way they've ended the season. Honestly, it's just been shambolic. There is no joke. There is no other, it's not a joke. There is no other description for that. You look at that group they were put in. The reason why Deepan and I were so confident that they will win it is purely because, to start with, okay, perhaps winning it might have been a step too far, but getting out of the group, bare minimum. Bare minimum. You can't give, I know Luka's good with kids, but you can't make the Young Lions play that well. So it's weird that it's amounted to this for LCS. I think there are massive problems at the club that needs to be addressed from a management level. And I know there's trouble brewing with Shopee, with Forest Lee. So I'm just wondering, do we now start to temper our expectations with LCS in terms of what we can expect from them? Because rewind the clocks to the season preview this year, we said LCS are going to wipe the floor with everyone. They should be expected to wipe the floor with everyone with the financial clout they brought along. Now that the finances are under question, under scrutiny, I'm just wondering, yeah, it's all good to play Borussia Dortmund next week and the fanfare is all good, but what's actually happening to you as a football club? That's my question.
To Roshan's point then, Hiria, I'll come to you. What should our expectations be of the Lion City Sailors for next year?
I think before that, I want to speak about how the reflection towards the place. I think I've been there in Luka's position before. Somebody who has not enough pedigree to be a head coach. And then after a while, when things were not, when the team was not winning, and then players started to not believe in you as much as they did at the first part of the your tenure. So I think at the end of the day, we are dealing with human beings, right? And if you treat them with the same amount of respect that you give, right? I think players would somehow, hey, let's just do this for ourselves, even if we don't agree with the coach professionally. But if you put it in a different way and you don't give the respect that they should be given to, or they should get, then players will just, I don't care about this coach anymore, right? I'll just play, right? And you lose that motivation. Yes, of course, you are seasoned professionals. I'm not saying that they are the coaching team is entirely to blame or whatever, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of human element into it, and it's something that was being overtaken by the tactical side of things. There's no way the moment you lose somebody in terms of respect, means you're gone, right? And you'll never come back. And moving on to what Farah said about next season, with the financial situation of Shopee and Forest Lee and all that, of course, I think we would now be expecting lesser, because they should be spending lesser. They are not, I think towards the last part of the season, they are not checking into hotels anymore the day before the games. So now everything is different. I mean, rumors have been going around about senior players leaving the team for next season. And I think these players are earning a decent amount of money, or rather a huge amount of money. So maybe their direction is going to be different. The expectation has to be different, and you won't expect a higher quality in the team, because I think next season they should be getting players who are younger. And of course, if you look at younger players in Singapore, they are not of the same quality as the older ones. So different quality in terms of on the field for LCS and also off the field, maybe they're going to cut back a lot of on their spendings and, you know, not to be so, hopefully still be engaging in terms of match day experience and all that, but nothing about, nothing extravagant, I would say. Yeah.
Roshan, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Kide covered most points there with regards to expectations. I do think maybe the league starting later a bit gives LCS a chance to recalibrate because they need to recalibrate in a big way. Plenty of rumours surrounding big paychecks leaving. Can you blame them? I don't think so. Job cuts everywhere, right? So let alone with Shopee suffering so much. I think they do need to... I've said this before when we were talking about Lucas' successor. They need to get the next appointment right. They need to get it spot on. LCS have not had one coach for one season since their iteration as the Lion City Sailors. I think that gives problems for anything you want to put in place. If the way forward, like Kide said, is younger players, is not your bona fide superstars, or maybe younger players with a sprinkle of bona fide superstars, you need a coach at the helm to take it forward. And I hope that above and beyond all the playing personnel who are leaving and coming in, they need to get their coaching appointment spot on, because clearly they bottled the last one and that's reflected very, very badly towards the end of 2022.
Yep, definitely. Whatever it is, we're all pretty much looking forward to the next season of the league already. But before we look ahead to that season, there's still that small business of the Singapore Cup. So let's look ahead to that. Like I said earlier, we're down to the final four teams. It's Albirex Niigata, Tampines Rovers, Hougang United and Balestier Khalsa. Before we get into our preview, just to set the scene a little in terms of qualification for the AFC Champions League and Cup, if one of Albirex or Tampines wins the Singapore Cup, the Lion City Sailors qualify for the Champions League and Geylang get the AFC Cup spot. But if Hougang or Balestier win the Cup, they then qualify for the AFC Cup instead. LCS, though, will need to win an ACL playoff to qualify for Asia's Premier Competition. And in the event that they don't clear that playoff hurdle, they will then compete in the AFC Cup alongside the Singapore Cup winners. So the semi-finals will begin on the 11th of November, Friday. And of course, it will be a two-legged semi-final, with the second leg to take place 4 days later on Tuesday, the 15th. So the first leg, Tampines Rovers will welcome Balestier Khalsa to our Tampines Hub, with Albirex Niigata welcoming Hougang United to the Jurong East Stadium, both matches kicking off at 7:45 p.m. simultaneously. Let's start with the Tampines Rovers and Balestier Khalsa showdown, because how good have Balestier been since the appointment of Peter Deru here?
Yeah, I think the stability that Peter Deru has gotten Balestier moving upwards has been fantastic. It's also because maybe they have been playing their best 11 as much as possible. There hasn't been any chopping or changing a lot in the first 11. They have gotten used to how Peter Deru wanted the team to play. And it's not fancy. I was commentating on the Balestier Khalsa and Young Lions game. They did the very efficient thing to do during the game. They played to their strength with Jumbo holding up the ball, and at the same time, the second pass and third pass is always behind the lines of Young Lions, and that created a lot of trouble. And they have been doing that all the way. So you can see certain patterns happening over their start with their style of play. And when you do that most of the time and it's successful, you just continue doing it and you get more confident doing it. And during the cup itself, I think with the quality that the Balestier Khalsa have as a squad, you don't really have a lot of players. So it's always the same bunch of players playing. With a short tournament like this, as in a Singapore Cup, you know, players are more motivated because they know that, oh, within 6 games, I can achieve something. It's not like a league where it's 28 games or whatever number of games that they played this season. So it's really a short tournament. We give our best within this 1 month, we can achieve something. So it's that motivation level with that stability that Peter Deru has brought in has created a different mold in intensity and also mentality of the Balestier Khalsa players. And you can see that it was also a very smart thing that they did against Young Lions. When I was commentating, the second half was really a ball game. Really, I can't wait for the half to end. But they did their job in the first half, and they wanted to do the smart thing by just resting their players. Very, very slow game. They didn't want to expend their energy a little bit more. And I think now with more rest, and they are in a better position now to compete against their players or worse over the next two legs. And it's really, I give credit to Peter Deru for for putting that stability in and then working really hard together with the players to make them enjoy their football again. I can see now that they are really enjoying it up front and also in defense because they are conceding so much lesser. And again, it should be a really good semi-final against a team that is also picking towards the end of the season in Tampines Rovers.
Well, I just want to thank Hideo. This is why we always invite Hideo on, because his answers are always so detailed like that. So thank you, Hideo. But anyways, on the note, like, I mean, Hideo said whatever he had to say about Balestier, and I think maybe we all are in agreement to what he said. But I want to ask Raushan now about Tampines Rovers. I mean, they're the 7-time finalists. They've won it 4 times. They were always considered a front runner in this competition, haven't they? I mean, especially being reigning champs and the strong end to the season that they had. My question to you, Raushan, is can they overcome Balestier to book that spot in the final?
I think so. I hope so.
It's
hard because Balestier, like Kide touched on, is a team in form, right? They are playing in a functional way. They're playing in a systematic way. Night and day between the impact Peter Diru has had since his appointment at Balestier and, sorry to bring this up again, but Lucas' appointment at LCS. But looking at Tampines, I do think they were always geared up for the cup. I know there's massive confidence amongst the Stags, the fans, the team, the players, the coaching staff that they can put on a cup run. And I think it's worked out in a way where they can possibly reach the final at least. Tampines, they have pedigree, 7-time finalists, reigning champions. I think Gavin Lee, having missed out on the Coach of the Year, as we touched on earlier, he deserves a bit of silverware, a bit of recognition for the progress he's made. And for Gavin's sake, for Tampines' sake, I do hope they can at least reach the final, because overcoming Albrecht, who I assume will reach the final, might be tough, but at least Gavin will have a tangible marker for the progress he's made with Tampines Rovers this season.
I do want to ask for predictions, but how are we doing this? Are we asking...
Just who goes through to the final.
Okay, Hide, who goes through?
I think Tampines will go through.
Tampines, Roshan?
Tampines,
yeah, okay, Tampines. The thing I want to say is, though, I expect Tampines to go through, but I wouldn't be surprised if Balestier were to go through. Does that make sense?
That's not quite a prediction, is it?
It is. My prediction is Tampines, but if Balestier do go through, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, shocking, like none of that.
Okay, I see what you mean.
They probably deserved it if they go through, right? Okay, let's move on to the next one, Hougang and Albirex. Let's begin with Hougang. They're into their third Singapore Cup semi-final, but they've never gotten past the final four. And now they have Firdaus Kassim, who is seemingly firmly at the helm. Can they spring a surprise? I'll come to you since
sorry, that's your sorry, friend. Sorry, before, I just want to re-angle the question slightly. Is Firkas in charge of Hougang at the moment? Kide, can you tell us that?
I think that he has been, I wouldn't say reinstated, but he's been up there managing the team in the Singapore Cup. And I think they would appoint him permanently starting next season onwards. Yeah.
So with that, with him pretty much confirming it, sort of. So again, with Firdaus Kassim seemingly now firmly at the helm, can they spring a surprise? Kidder.
Yeah, I seriously believe so. I think from what I saw in against Tampines, where they won 1-0, defensively they were quite stable. I wouldn't say stable, but they were quite stable. Anders had a very good game, something that I wouldn't say about Anders this whole season, but for that game, he made like maybe one or two mistakes, but everything else was perfect. His defending against Boris was perfect. And tactically, Tampines couldn't, of course, the pitch played a huge factor. Tactically, Hougang was pressing Tampines very high, won a lot of transitions from there, had a few chances, direct chances from there as well. So tactically, I think Firdaus has set up Hougang to be better in that sense to play against Tampines. But Albrecht is a different matter because Albrecht plays a different way. And if Hougang, or rather if the back line of Hougang decides to turn up against Albrecht for both legs, I'm pretty sure in attack, they can score the goals. It's always about them leaking the goals behind. So if Anders plays a near-perfect game, if Lionel plays a near-perfect game, and I think now they are more stable with Zainol in goal, and Muhaimin and also Farhan not making mistakes that will lead directly towards an attack by Albirex, I think they should be fine. because at the end of the day, they have Sahil, they have Pedro back with the suspension. They have Kiki, they have Amy, they have Shawal. Up front, they are packed with a lot of firepower, and definitely they can score against Albrecht. It's again about how they manage these two legs and how they're going to play the odd 180 minutes, 190 minutes that they're going to come out with something tactically against Albrecht.
Yeah, that's my issue with Haugang possibly toppling Albrecht. If it was 90 minutes, if it was a one-legged affair, I would say, yeah, okay, go. Haugang can do this in 90 minutes. But like Kide touched on, it's so rare that Anders Eplin has a perfect game. It's so rare that Lionel Tan has a perfect game. Here we are expecting them to have two perfect games against the reigning champions. I'm not a great maths guy, but I don't see that happening. Sorry. I just feel Albrecht, if they needed more wind to their sails, they would have been buoyed by the whitewash in the awards night after cleaning out the season. So I suspect they're going to fully come through and get the job done against Haugang. Granted, I take all of Kide's good notes about Haugang on board. I think Firkas has done well to turn things around, to give them a bit more stability, more than ever so. But I think this will be a step too far for the Cheetahs, unfortunately.
Okay, I'll let everyone marinate on what these two have just said. Because before I ask for your predictions, I will just get our favorite Mr. Ree to give us his predictions, and then we'll give everyone ours. So, everyone, Mr. Ree and his predictions.
Do you miss me? I'm back. I've been having a rest, some would say just like the Lion City Sailors. But this week I'm here to give you my predictions. Or rather, what's going to happen in the Singapore Cup. Haugang face a very, very talented Albrecht side. It's going to be tough for them. But in the first leg, Albrecht will show their class. 2-0 to Albrecht. Balestier Khalsa against Tampines Rovers. This one is played on artificial grass, which means Tampines will be able to play. Tampines take the first leg 1-0.
All right then, Mystery embracing us with his predictions as always. So now I'll come back to you guys. Hide, how do you think this one will play out? Who will make it to the finals?
My heart tells me that Haugang will do it, but I think Albrecht will go through on penalties.
Roshan,
are you commentating on the game? Because I hope it'll be you overtime if it goes to penalties.
I don't know. I'm on for one of the games, but I don't know which game it will be.
Okay. For me, my head, I don't care with my heart for either of these teams. So my head tells me Albrecht will probably go through, and yeah, I think there will be a repeat of previous Singapore Cup final where Albrecht take on Tampines.
Lovely. I'm also gonna go for Albrecht. No heart, no brain thing, because like we mentioned,
heartless. You will be heartless.
Albrecht's are favorites, Andy. We say whatever we say, but at the end of the day, they certainly are big favorites for the Singapore Cup title. They've won it 4 times, just as many times as Tampines Rovers have. But considering the season that they've had, I feel like they're the ones who are going to make a clean sweep here. So yeah, I'm fully expecting Albrecht to go all the way. Well, guys, it's always good fun, isn't it? Especially with these two around and Hidir and his completely detailed answer. Again, that's why we call him on and pay him absolutely nothing to be on. As always, thank you guys for your constant support to the pod. Please continue to do what you do. Share, like, subscribe. Tell us what you think. Tell us what you want to hear. Tell us what you like and what you don't like. And you can always hit us up at The Final Whistle across our socials and Telegram. Or you can come to me and Roshan personally at Roshan Says or at Farah Nair. Thank you, Roshan. Thank you, Hide, for your amazing insights as always. We'll be back, same place, ahead of the final. Till next time. Bye-bye.